Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to jump into the cliffhanging story arc of the Unari.
Awesome, but also finish a GW.
Yeah. This was going great for a while, and they just stopped. So our cast will eventually just stop on it, too, because we'll be like...
Top 5 stories in all of 40K. I'm leaving it out there.
You think it is?
Mm-hmm. There's a whole arc. I'm not saying single individual story. There's other better stories.
Oh, yeah.
But
it is super exciting. It also is the most culminating in the sense of culminating is actually the wrong word there. It's the best story of bringing multiple factions together under one story.
100%. They have everybody.
Yeah. Everyone gets touched by it and it's really, really cool. I mean, the problem is do you classify Psychic Awakening as part of it? That story arc?
I am. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the Psychic Awakening story arc is the Unari story.
You're right. That's a good point. Because I was going to say, the Psychic Awakening was an amazing addition to the story.
It touched everybody. Because the people they were fighting, it almost gave...
Even the White Scars.
You had so many different factions that were represented either as protagonists, antagonists. Everybody was involved in this.
Yeah, let's talk about that some more in a little bit. But it's a good point because it is it's kind of a cool story arc. All right, but anyway, for those unaware, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, with new episodes releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, before we begin, please follow and comment on the cast. It's really the only way we can reach new listeners is via word of mouth and the algorithm of Spotify and a little bit of iTunes. So the stream platforms really prefer having reviews and comments. So if you do that, more people discover us. So that's great. And for those of you who've been doing it, they are funny. Some of your comments are quite entertaining.
Scramble us back into the top 100. We're just out.
I'm fine. You want to be famous. I don't care. I just enjoy doing this. So I'm going to keep doing it.
It's better to burn out than fade away. And I'm doing it hard.
Yeah, it's true. That is true. Yeah.
I got a limited lifespan.
Yeah.
I mean, I am definitely on the clearance rack of meat on the supermarket.
You are a Great Dane in everything but size.
I'm deceptively tall.
It's like, oh, Brad's got all these issues. Yeah. Like a Great Dane would, except the Great Dane's the largest dog. And then there's Brad.
I do breathe like a pug.
There's also that. You're doing great.
Yeah. Everything's working out. It's all roses, baby.
All right. If you click on the About for our show, you'll see a number of links to things, including our website, the40klorecast.com, along with our Discord and our Patreon. Our website's becoming a growing space where we have information on the cast, Brad's coaching services, expanding merchandise, and actually some upcoming events, including a new podcast that Brad's going to be on. So you guys, this is going to sound, that whole bit sounded really weird to all of you because I had to edit a bunch of Brad and I having a side conversation. I'll make it a lot cleaner. Brad's got another podcast that's being it's releasing, not with me, so we'll see which one's better. And the first links to it will be popping up on our website and our Discord.
So, I mean, you guys are the same person, so.
Yeah, it's basically a guy who, it's a different voice than John, but same level of John.
That is a real, I'm going to start using
it. The two of us.
Definitely level of John.
Yeah, just we're both there. Or if you know Alan first, the level of Alan. So anyway, so our Discord, the link there, is an online community that we established with the cast in mind. The goal was to make a place where we could interact with our listeners, but more importantly, our listeners can interact with each other. Right now, we're over 6,500 members at time of recording, or zero when you listen to this, if I've decided to burn the thing to the ground. always an option.
You should take pills and get injections because you want to burn it down
so bad.
You're a weird man.
It terrifies me to have my name attached to an online community of text with 6,500 strangers in it.
I feel like you've been in WITSEC for a long time.
There's just a lot of that where you're like, burn it down. But credit where credit's due. We have an incredible group of mods who are running this thing and keeping it from needing to be burned down. If it wasn't for them, long gone. But for those of you who want to interact around it, our Discord's one of the best places, I think, to interact on 40K. You've got literature advice. You've got tabletop advice, video gaming. You've got memes, general chat, discussion of casts, questions, places you can tell me all the new words I can't pronounce correctly. All of this stuff. It's a wonderful place to come in. And it's a nice place you can jump in, jump out, and have a lot of great interactions for. Lastly, as we always discuss this, Brad is a coach of 40K, 30 years of playing. I think we're in the countdown now, aren't we? How many years left?
So I'm immortal.
Exactly. Nope.
Mumra.
You are the inverse of the Highlander. Just say it now. I mean, there should only be one Brad.
There can only be Brad.
Yeah, it's not there can be. Unfortunately, there's more than a few.
Unfortunately, there's only Brad.
Yeah, we're down to just one Brad, but it's more like it's not having his head chopped off. It's more the Brad's body doing it to himself. Anyway, if you're looking for coaching and want to kind of understand the game a little bit better, Brad's a really great resource. I actually do play some of his coaching clients, and you can see there's quite a lot of improvement in them. Brad's a very good coach at not only teaching people, you know, hey, do this, don't do that, but more importantly, the why. Why you do things with the game, how to play the game better, ways to actually just improve your general gameplay, little like tips and tricks at the start of each turn, at the middle of each turn to kind of help you stay on point so you can successfully win your games. So, but with that, on to the cast. So the Yunari.
Boom.
All right. As Brad and I were discussing at the open of the cast, the Yunari are one of the newest storyline in the game, and they came in with a hell of a bang, both positive and negative on the player base, depending on which models you owned.
Hold on.
Did you own the Yunari models? Very positive impact. Did you not?
The story was amazing.
Yep.
The mechanics
were so bad.
Wow.
Get them in a bit, but they're awesome. The mechanics were fantastic. So, all right. So between our last cast on the Harlequins and our fourth cast on the Eldar, we covered a bit on the start of the Yunari, but just to kind of recap for everybody, here's kind of a little quick hit. During one of his seances within his Craft Worlds Infinity Circuit, Eldrad noticed there was a distant heartbeat coming from the inside.
Seances? I mean, you're not wrong.
It's a seance.
Fine.
Brad loves Eldrad, so if anything I do about him doesn't make him sound like an 80s action hero, we get super upset about.
Seances. Now I feel like he's got the Ouija board and he's with his other 13-year-old friends. Like,
honestly, if they had cartooned this up, he would have been sitting like legs crossed.
Oh, he would be
up.
Floating.
Yeah, just floating
with
in the air,
light around him.
Yeah, this is a pretty lame scene. But anyway, the heartbeat that Eldrad heard, it's not speaking to him, but it was more kind of a coalescence of dead souls that were forming into one. So he did his little, you know, montage of reading and discovered that this is the sign of a new god being formed, the god of the dead. The greatest challenge the Eldar have on their quest of how to undo the fall is how do you kill a god?
And this is one of the biggest things that is in Eldar life, because while Slaanesh still exists, every soul not captured and gone into a soul gem and going into the Infinity Circuit is destroyed by She Who Thirsts. Slaanesh is eating all Eldar souls, and while no Eldar is safe, while Slaanesh still exists, she was born from trillions of Eldar souls, and she has claimed stake on all of them. Everyone that has been born will be born, everything else. Until Slaanesh is dead, that is why they're considered a dying race, because, oh yeah, there's somebody out there that rips your actual soul from you. Is there a soul? Yes. And Slaanesh makes them delicious and puts them on top of sundaes.
Yep. But the solution to that is, how about we just make our own god and have that god kill the evil god? So Eldred just found one. So this point, Eldred sets out a call to get to the bottom of like how to bring this god to life. And the Aletok craft world's Pathfinders had just such an answer. Thanks to their Phoenix Lord, who was he was Resin, and I just lost him in the new codex. And I'm not cool about that if it's not unclear. So the Aletok discovered just outside the edge of the original Eldar space was a world named Demesnus. And it's now an imperial world, which, you know, is an issue. That world
gets super important, but also it's going to get super conflict.
Yeah, super awkward. So that world had a moon on it, and the moon was covered in sand. And the sand wasn't sand. It was actually the leftover souls of dead Eldar. So effectively, when Slaanesh was born, we cover this a lot throughout the casts, that powerful psychers, when they're destroyed, they fragment into shards. That we saw Tzeentch did it, Magnus did it. Actually, that's what the Avatar of Cain is. Quite a few of them do this. It turns out that every Eldar, or anything that's psychic, if there's enough power, that's what happened to as well. And so this moon is covered in a sand that is effectively made up of billions of dead Eldar, but not like their ashes, the remnants of their psychic powers, which makes this moon an incredible psychic amplifier. And Eldred decides to run over there. So before he does this, though, he's going to channel, and we talked about this in the last cast, all of the craft world's infinity circuits, all of them, by the way, not one or two, all of them, to focus into this one area. So he's going to pump the dead souls from the infinity circuits via psychic powers into a moon that's basically covered in psychic energy. And the goal is this should create enough psychic energy to pull Yeneed into reality, effectively.
And fully consciousness.
Yep.
Well, this is also, I said it when we talked about it the last time, but I need to reiterate it because this is such an all-in on your bet. Doesn't work, you just went, whoops-a-daisy, I effectively killed all of our ancestors.
Yeah, forever. Good news, if it doesn't work, the Eldar, let me say that better. There's a lot of players in the game who wish that this hadn't worked because it would have removed Eldar from the game.
Pretty much, yeah.
It would have been the end. Eldar, start of 8th edition, there are no Eldar anymore.
Yep.
Is how this would have gone. But anyway, that didn't happen. The Eldar all traveled on the moon and began their ritual. The moon orbited, you know, an imperial planet, and Eldred had a plan. The best thing to do is, since we're going to sneak onto this moon and do a massive event there, what we should do is draw a ton of attention to the system by randomly attacking a world, a massive imperial world, and not just attacking it like a little bit of a skirmish, full-blown invasion of just anarchy and death.
Everything about Eldred's plan was magnificent except for this, and this was cataclysmically stupid.
Yeah, so they launch an attack on an imperial planet that's just a port. It's not well defended, with a full-blown Eldar force.
And they start wrecking
shop. Just wrecking shop. They could have done this with like four wave serpents and a prism, but instead they sent everything.
And also, it happened to be really close to one of the Death Watch stations.
Yeah, so the distress call goes out, and the Death Watch answer, and like, wait, what's going on? How many Eldar are there? And Watch Captain Artemis happens to be the Watchmaster there and realizes that this obviously is much more important. The Eldar would never attack a port city with this level of fury unless they had some strategic value. So he grabs all of his Death Watch and runs over there. Upon arriving in the Demesnes system, he realizes that the Eldar are attacking the planet, but they're holding a massive force back and encircling this moon, Koharia.
This is another reason both of the sides are being dicks at this point in time, because he goes, I think they're doing something fishy on the moon, and just goes to the moon while they continue to pound town the planet.
Well, he couldn't have cared less about the planet. He just goes, they're up to something. To be fair, though, this is Death Watch. They didn't care about the people on the planet. The Death Watch were there to be like, what are the Xenos up to? Let's go stop that. And looked around and went.
It's just so funny because they're like, we're still getting murdered. They went, yeah, but they're
but I'm going over this way. There's something really important up there. Now, I will say that there were Farseers, Forces of Harlequins, Eldar. Captain Artemis just ran through the entire moon.
They wrecked shop.
Yeah, just destroyed them all. And it all and this all ends in classic Eldar fashion, where Artemis just, and Death Watch, ruined the Eldar. And the Eldar, at the end, the last one he speaks to is actually a Death Jester who was leading the Harlequins and looked at Artemis and started pleading with him to put aside his Xeno hatred so that they could, you know, because what they're doing here would end chaos. And Artemis just shoots her in the head. And this is because Artemis, in the classic Eldar, Eldar could have just made a call and been like, hey, guys, we're going to do this thing on the moon. Don't F with it, because if you do, we will end you. But if you don't, good news, we're going to kill She Who Thirsts. Instead, they just decided to wreck shop and then got wrecked back. So the ritual ends and it kind of fails, sort of. What it does is, and again, you can read this however you want. The way I kind of read this was that it brought in a little bit of consciousness, and it was, and that consciousness as it was forming on the moon, the war on the moon just fired the consciousness back through the galaxy. And like almost like a comet.
I feel that this is completely just my take on it, was that Yennade is awake in the way that the Emperor is now awake, shattered a bit, knowing things but not knowing how to deal with it, and was looking for a way to interact with
the world. I viewed it as like, yeah, she now, I kind of saw it almost like in Slaanesh sense, where she now had a taste for reality and was searching for a way to enter reality.
Yeah, anything. So to be honest with you, it's just kind of how you want your personal
view. Yeah, take it how you want.
Because Yennade's got one eye awake. How about that?
Yeah. So on to Yavrain. So Yavrain was born on Beltan. She walked the path of the warrior and the path of the warlock. She was actually a dancer at one point, not like the creepy sense, like more like a
dancer of death.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was back in BL10. She was a dancer. Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is, it wasn't like she was a dancer and like, what, she went to the club? Like, no, she actually, like, they had like the Eldar, the Cirque du Soleil stuff is big within the
Eldar. Again, remember, Eldar are crazy on stuff. When they do anything, it has to be to the maximum perfection. Mm-hmm.
So the full history of Yavrain, we really don't know. But what we know is that at some point, like a lot of craft world Eldar, she followed all these different paths. And like a lot of craft world Eldar who are part of BL-10 walked away. BL-10 are very fiercely pro-Eldar.
In the fact that they are probably the craft world that's totally okay with the most collateral damage of not Eldar.
Yeah, the BL-10 believe that what's happened to the Eldar is a blip in their history. They recognize, you know, and their viewpoint is effectively, after we kill Slaanesh and the rest of Chaos, we're going back to our former glory and ruling the galaxy. And so at this point, they're the most militant branch because they're effectively preparing both to kill Slaanesh, but also to reconquer the galaxy.
Well, it's just retake their proper place in the galaxy.
Yeah, now. It's take back their property is how they're viewing it. Like, it's pretty rough. The issue, though, is that BL-10 are the most aggressive. Well, it's actually them in a late talk. Are some of the most aggressive around
Maiden Worlds.
Yeah, around Maiden Worlds, but also on following of the path.
Well, they're most hardcore at following the path. They have the most Aspect Morias of any craft world.
So yeah. So what happens when you're like that is eventually people leave because they kind of get sick of it. So at some point, Yavrain left.
Well, that's the crazy part. When you have the most OCD people in the galaxy and then you up that and then you go, you guys are a little too hardcore even for me. I got to go.
So Yavrain leaves. Yavrain leaves to follow the path of an outcast. At some point, she joins a Corsair fleet, which are just Eldar pirates. And, you know, like any pirate, life of a pirate can be kind of dangerous. So she ended up in a mutiny. And the mutiny made her flee. And the only place she could go at this point, because she left her craft world, and now her pirate fleet's killing her, is she went to Kamara. And
joined a witch cult. Yeah. She has the most crazy backstory.
Well, I think I'm underselling it. So she's in BL-10 doing Aspect Warrior BL-10.
And a warlock.
And succeeding, is what I'm saying. So she's a successful warlock. So she's a great psyker. She's an incredible fighter because she was, I want to say it was a Dire Avenger, if I'm not mistaken, she.
I can't remember Avenger. What aspect where she was
because she was under the dude, the Visark. I think the Visark was a doesn't matter. But anyway, the point being is that, but she is an exceptional warrior. She then leads a Corsair fleet, a very successful Corsair fleet. So she's a hell of a pilot.
She also and a hung pilot. Out with the Rangers for a while.
Yeah, she's like, she outcast the Rangers.
You forgot another 100 years of her past.
Then she lands in Kamara, where effectively day one, she starts fighting. She joins a witch cult and elevates herself to the title of succubus. So she's now leading an entire witch cult. So she's doing pretty well. Anyway, all good things come to an end, though. And eventually she makes such a name for herself as a fighter and amongst the witch cult that they organize a fight for her in the arena against Lilith Hesperix.
Which is?
No one beats Lilith.
Yeah.
No one.
No one even comes close.
Yeah.
Lilith refuses to take combat drugs because it makes her kill people too fast.
It's boring. Yeah. So in order to fight Lilith, though, Yvraine has to go through a trial. And this is a little bit kind of lame. So I'm going to be candid. If Lilith is it Lilith or Lilith, by the way? I think it's Lilith.
Doesn't matter.
So people will correct me. I believe it's Lilith because there's an E in there, but whatever. In order to fight Lilith, who's the greatest warrior that has ever lived, you don't just get to fight her. You have to fight like 50 people before you fight Lilith, which is kind of weird. So you end up pretty tired. So Yvraine goes through a bunch of trials in the arena where she's fighting witches, not one-on-one, like waves of them. She took on Incubi and kind of in her coup de grace is she fought a hive tyrant.
Which, how?
Yeah, how the Drukhari picked up a hive tyrant, I don't know.
How you keep a hive tyrant because it's linked to the hive.
Well, they're in the webway, so I assume that might
cut it off. I don't know.
But yeah.
I wouldn't take the hive tyrant. I would kill it. I wouldn't take it with me because I don't want...
Yeah, they captured a hive tyrant, which also...
Well done.
Credit to you guys on that raid. That's some badass
The tricks. Beastmasters went, come on.
Yeah, oh yeah, well, they went back like, you guys are not going to believe this one. This is the guy named Trajan was like, all right. You guys, I see you and I will raise you a ship. But anyway, so, and Yvraine, by the way, kills the hive tyrant in hand-to-hand combat and disintegrates it with, I think it's her agonizer. So now she gets to fight Lilith.
Yeah, and this one kind of goes Achilles versus Hector.
Yeah, so this...
it's not close.
This entire fight encompasses about one sentence. Lilith beats the crap out of her. And, like, I mean...
Quickly.
Yeah, Lilith just devastates her, beats Yvraine so badly, and she's so disdained by Yvraine's fighting ability that she won't even kill Yvraine. She just beats her, and she gives her a couple mortal wounds and just walks away. And then leaves Yvraine to be dealt with by some of Lilith's hanger-ons or just random Denzians. Here's the thing, though,
because this is right about the time when Lilith opened up the package of plot armor. Sorry.
Yeah.
Lilith was approached by a priestess.
Well, she was a priestess of Mor'Hag, who is the Eldar god of fate. And this priestess is there. It's coming. It's the fighter. That says like approach. Like, hey, let me help you. It's like I'm going to kill you in honor of Mor'Hag. And with what little energy left, Yvraine starts fighting this priestess. But she's just so heavily wounded that she's effectively dying while fighting off this priestess, who she should have killed. By the way, like a millisecond. Yvraine's still an incredible warrior, and this priestess is a woman with a sword. That's kind of how I would describe it. All of a sudden, though, as Yvraine's about to die because she just has no energy left, this shooting star is how I view Yanid, is flying across galaxy, just slams into Yvraine. And when I say slams into, I don't mean like, I feel the power growing inside me. There was an explosion in the arena.
And she killed everyone.
Everybody fell off. Everyone fell to the ground. Anything near her was evaporated.
Yeah, she set off a nuke.
Yeah, right. Effectively, as Yanid hits her. And Yvraine gets back up. And it's not really Yvraine anymore. She's now a Eldar who is imbued with the power of a god, more so than an avatar of Kane. At this moment in time, she is the most powerful Eldar in the galaxy. I think technically she still is.
Not on the board, but in the lore right now.
In like the early 8th edition, she's
still really good. Don't get me wrong, but I have a we'll argue about the sword stuff and things like that. Like,
that's fair. Yeah. Oh no, her rules suck.
Yeah.
I mean, like
AP 2 damage is not what she's carrying.
She's more powerful than the Yinkarn.
She can cut through reality. Yeah.
In the stories, she's more powerful than the Yinkarn, effectively, and the Yinkarn, it's not even close. Yeah. All right. So anyway.
Well, this is a bad news, by the way, for the people that are going to this arena. One, a small nuclear bomb went off, and then, well,
it also kind of ripped a hole in the webway through it and the Immaterium. So suddenly, as Yevrain's about to basically get murdered by everyone around her, because don't forget this, these are the Jukari. They can sense power, and they get power from pain, and the power that would be generated by murdering slowly Yevrain would be nice. But a giant hole above the arena opens, and the force of Slaanesh just come pouring through. You know who loved this? Vect. Super happy about this moment, by the way.
Just wrecking part of the city.
Yeah, Vect was there just to watch a nice little, like you know, football game. Pick your country. The reference still works. And instead, he now has to marshal all of his defensive forces to handle a full-blown invasion of his city. Yevrain starts to run away. So a couple things that happen with Yevrain as she's running away. First off, she runs into a model that I think looks amazing, and the rules have just sucked.
They're the best they've ever been right now.
What? No, I think 8th, he was good in 8th.
Still wasn't worth it.
Yeah,
you still didn't bring him.
Yeah.
You bring him right now because of fights first.
Yeah.
And you might not bring him anymore in the first place because you can't put him in Harlequins anymore.
That's true. All right. So
he's now in his top form.
And he's still
He's still probably not going to be.
So there was a Dire Avenger Exarch named Larian Starspeaker. Hate that name more than I can explain to you.
You probably hate Luke Skywalker too, then.
Really? You figure it out? That's what I was going with. Larian Starspeaker, Luke Skywalker. I know what they were doing.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, so he was a BL-10 Dire Avenger Exarch, and he actually had been the one who trained Yevrain when she was walking the path of the warrior. And he had a real affection for her because he felt there was something destined for her. When she left BL-10, he was really sad about that. You know, because this is one of his favorite warriors. However, when he heard rumor that she joined a witch cult in the Dark City, Larian decided to go there and to try and bring her back.
And why is because for the Beeltan, for followers of the Aspect, each Aspect is like the purest form that you can focus on. Falling to not just Dark Eldar, but Dark Eldar witch cults is an abomination of what you've been fighting for.
Totally. And the way they wrote this is basically there are comedies that are written about like this. So in order to get her back, he goes to the Dark City because remember, she has joined a witch cult. She's now part of the Jukari and she's representing evil. So what does he do? He joins the Incubi.
Yeah, this is a buddy cop movie.
and he becomes such a good Incubi that he becomes the leader of an Incubi shrine. At which point, at no point in this process does this Incubi shrine start fighting for the courses of good.
No.
He is now
a murderer for hire.
Yeah, complete murder, but he's one of the best. And he takes on the new name of the Visark. It was blood, I can't remember the name, but it translates some way. So when you need it, is crashes into Yevrain and breaks the sky above Kamara, the Visark knew it was Yevrain and began kind of running in that general direction. Yevrain and her blood brides, which are the members of the blood of the witch cult that followed her, were fleeing through the Dark City to try and find a webway gate.
Well, they're upgraded. The blood brides are like your retinue. The
next
of
level.
The up. Best level
people. Yeah. So the Visark just starts fighting through demons and Drukhari to get to her side. I'm not going to kind of.
It is pretty awesome.
This whole scene is actually awesome. And I'm trying to give this enough, but not spoil it so that when you guys go read the book, you're like, oh, I already knew this was going to happen. It's their escape from the Dark City is super badass and would make a very good like animated series. Like, well,
they
really
have a
cool
running
thing.
Fight and they're hiding and they're running and they're fighting and they're hiding.
And they get a Corsair fleet to help them out, which they didn't have to crash into something in order to get out. It's amazing. So But they do eventually, Yvraine, her blood brides, and the Visarch escape into the web.
In a ragtag band of other people.
Of random people. Yeah. He was like a solitaire randomly.
There's a bunch of random, they literally get all these people. Yeah. Right,
one quick side note as we kind of get into this a bit more. I did read these stories years ago. We're about to tell, this cast is going to be us trying to tell the story all the way through. Some of these bits, it's possible we get out of order. I did a ton of research to try and help us keep this in order, but
there's also some stuff happened at the exact same time in different parts of the galaxy.
Yeah, so I just want to open up with if this is the your favorite story at all, and I get something out of order, I apologize. We really did try. So anyway, with that out of the way, let's move into Yvraine.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So, as soon as she leaves the Dark City, Yvraine knew of the god. Yvraine became fully conscious of Yeneed inside of her. This was not like a surprise. Like, oh, so, well, I'm a special star child. No, she's talking to the god.
Right, and she knows her mission now that she has to. But it's really cool because she knows she has to get allies, and she's not afraid because of the life she's led.
Yeah,
she's going to get her allies from everywhere.
And this story is awesome. These books are fantastic, by the way. So she needs to raise this army of allies. Each day that went by, Yvraine's powers went up, not just for her, but also for her followers. And this becomes really important in how she's able to raise more followers. Yvraine's not just imbued with the power of the god. She was Yeneed's link to the Materium. So kind of like a demon prince, she can be a conduit for a dark god.
And she's powering everybody around her with Yeneed's power.
And so Yvraine's followers become imbued with this power. The power of strength from death.
And it's a real thing.
Yeah. And as they fight, Yvraine and her followers, they gain power from dead souls around them. It's on a kind of a more basic level. You absorb, the souls of those who are dying in your presence. But it also might just be that Yeneed is feasting on those souls as they're dying. And
she's like the Eldar version of Slaanesh. She's come on.
What's crazier to me, though, is that the followers of Yvraine, so the new Yanari, could actually power themselves up from the spirit stones that they carried in their chest. They could actually reach into those stones and draw power out of the dead souls inside of them, which leads to these followers of Yvraine, the Yanari, becoming incredibly powerful, way more so than even a regular Eldar. And this has led some people to postulatize that there is no Yeneed. Yeneed is just Slaanesh, pretending to be Yeneed.
I'm trying to get your souls. If you could just give them to me, that would be great.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, and we'll dive into that a bit later. Let's just say Slaanesh, though, did notice this and did not think it was cool.
And she sends a lot of folks.
Yes. Slaanesh launches a full bore assault into tracking down Yvraine and kill her and kill Yanid.
Now, I like this a lot because they go into the books of this, but it's a lot of the stories in Psychic Awakening. Slaanesh doesn't just send, hey, I sent a group of bounty hunters.
You know,
it wasn't Bossk from Star Wars wasn't tracking her down. She sent cultists, emperor, you know, anybody that worships Slaanesh. She also sent attacks through the Immaterium. Anytime they tried to use psychics, she was trying to psychically attack them. This is a full frontal assault of everything.
And Slaanesh is right to be afraid. The Yanari are beginning to display powers that the Eldar had long ago, like before the fall, before that, when the Eldar were first really expanding into the galaxy, where they and their gods were connected. Because ever since the fight between Cain and Isha, the Eldar were, you know, observed by their gods. But before that, they were interacted with more aggressively, kind of like Kegarak with the Harlequins. Right. The power of an Eldar god behind the Eldar launches them all the way up.
Wildly so. So one of the reasons they won the war in heaven.
Now, one of the many reasons for Slaanesh's full assault on Yvraine, her followers, is that she was also gaining followers hand over fist. This is because her stories, Yvraine's stories and her actions appeal to all forms of the Eldar. Because Yvraine's not some random person standing outside, like lecturing passerbyers on philosophy. Like, you know, consider the lilies or the birds. Have they got jobs? And they're just happy. Yvraine was, you know, if you don't get that reference, sorry.
Just leaving that out there.
It's a great reference. And if you can't figure out what it's from, sorry.
Google it.
Yeah, Google it. Just look up, you know, consider the birds and the lilies. Have they got jobs? He says the birds are scrounging. It's such a good movie. All right. Anyway, Yvraine was actually speaking towards the salvation of the Eldar. And more importantly, those in her presence felt it. We're about to talk about, actually, let's do it now. Let's talk about strength from death and soul burst. This is going to create some PTSD for
awesome
some players.
Awesome lore, though. Awesome lore.
Awesome lore. This one's going to hurt for some people who played back then because this one hurt. So Yanid is the god of death. Every time a life ends, energy is released, and that feeds her growth and by proxy her followers. Now, like as we said earlier, there's some fan theories that Yanid is actually Slaanesh in another form. The idea here is that Slaanesh has hidden herself in an effort to trick the Eldar into giving their souls over willingly. And by posing as this god of death, she's getting the Eldar to expose themselves and just gobbling up all the souls, giving them a little bit of power to convince them that she's actually helping. But in reality, it's playing a long game. I think this theory could align, except I just disagree.
It makes no sense for the rest of the story, though.
That's why. It's if you dig deeper into the story, it doesn't make sense. When you factor in the crystal tome.
The Emperor also doesn't interfere with this. I would give some relevance to this if when Bobby G enters the story and he also interacts with the Emperor and the Emperor does not feel the taint
melt
of chaos.
Melt Bobby G into a billion because little pieces.
If that was it, Bobby G would have been a
that's a good point.
Resurrected by Slaanesh.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I was actually more just thinking about the story of the Crystal Tome we talked about last time, where Kegarak is going to trick Slaanesh into expending all of her energy to save the Eldar. I think that's what this really is. So my theory is that the Black Library. To Brad talking about the Emperor, I actually think it's more the Black Library. I think the Harlequins would have known.
The Harlequins wouldn't have.
What I'm saying is there's so many checks that this goes through where there's like the entire Harlequins would have been hunting down Yvraine to murder her if this was Slaanesh.
Well, to be fair, if you're not getting tricked by Tzeentch, you're not getting tricked by Slaanesh. I'm sorry.
Exactly. that's a good
significantly
point.
Better at it than the other is.
So to our point about strength from death, so Yanid's power is, though, not that dissimilar from other chaos gods. Her followers do things that fall in line with what she likes, and they gain power as she gains sentience. And this kind of, like, couples through. And it's just like Khorne. Khorne can make a champion, and the more the champion does, the more stronger, faster, tougher they get.
Let's touch back on a little bit, though, because we talked about this. everybody powered by the Immaterium is effectively doing the same thing as the Chaos Gods, because the Immaterium by itself is not evil. It was, there's places of exactly. great evil here, but the Imperium itself was originally not, it's just a place of power. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah, it's where all emotions set in the right. galaxy would settle. And then as those emotions became more extreme, it became.
And the entire galaxy's at war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like an online. Yeah. Like an online forum.
Started out so serene. So
good. Everyone was really helpful. And now
it is not
burnt to the ground.
Agreed. A place of great evil. Exactly.
So where this powers up is that as the Inari are fighting and there's death around them, both from people who are their allies and those who oppose them, fuels this god of death. And this strength from death then becomes imbued into the followers. Unlike the Drukhari, though, for whom this power kind of is a waxing and waning effect, where the Drukhari, as they commit these acts, the power comes in, but Slaanesh at the same time is pulling the power out, the Inari get a super power up, and it tends to last a lot longer, where they're massively stronger. It's kind of like in an old video game where you'd find something and become invincible.
For a small amount of time.
Yeah, very, very small amount of time. The Inari, the Drukhari, it's like a long power build.
It's the reason that they called it Soul Burst.
Exactly. So on the tabletop, it functioned exactly as that. Oopsie, GW. So every time GW decides to make a rule for the tabletop that lines up with the lore that it was written for, it goes horribly sideways.
To GW's horribly. Credit, in discredit, this was a terrible so rule, bad. But it was amazing lore.
Oh, that's one point. I'm laughing at this because this is one of those screw-ups where they put a lot of time into writing this, and there was a lot of, I guarantee you, pride coming out of the GW rules writers.
Oh, it aligns perfectly with the
lore. We took it. We took a story that we wrote, and we made rules for it that are dead on accurate. And everyone's going to read this and go, man, this is amazing. This is so cool. I get to play my Inari. And apparently none of them asked the question of, what would it be like to play against this?
So let's do the original. Original.
The original is the only one I care about.
The best is I tested this. The original said, didn't matter what, whether it was your opponent's turn or your turn.
Yep.
They kept narrowing it down until they just threw it away. But the original version of it was, if something died within 7 inches of you, friend or foe, mm-hmm. you got to then act. And I'll tell you what happened in a game. I ran my entire army on top of turn one in 7-inch increments away from my opponent. He killed one thing, and then I killed him.
His entire army. The way this worked was, and we should go through this. So these were, by the way, I'm not making these up. I'm reading these to you. I wrote them down from the index this was in. Anytime anything dies within 7 inches of a Inari infantry or biker unit, which is the entire army,
I was saying, yeah.
But you, I guess you could bring something in your army that didn't have this power, but
if you're an idiot.
Exactly. So that unit could immediately perform one of 5 actions. They could move, do a psychic action, which used to be separate and still should be. They were awesome. They could shoot something. They could charge something. Or if they were in engagement range, they could fight.
It was so crazy.
Literally the 5 phases of the game, they could just do it that
way. And it was crazy because they would do it immediately. So in your opponent's shooting phase, all of a sudden you're shooting at them and charging them. And you could do crazy stuff because if your opponent did 2 different charges, they killed something and then you got to fight and or charge the thing that had just fought. And because the rules say if you have already fought, you can't fight again, you would get charged after you killed something by something else. And you're like, so I just get to stand here and get punched? Yes.
Yeah. I mean, again, this made sense lore-wise because
100%
under you need whether a foe or ally was destroyed near a Inari, the Inari would absorb their energy and it would infuse them with power. There were no restrictions, as I said, in the game when this would happen. So as the Brad said, a savvy player would just basically make these triangles all over the board where everything was in 7 inches of each other. And your entire, also there was no restriction. So the restriction was you couldn't have a unit affected by Soul Burst more than once. But
they could Solberst activate for someone could else.
Let you, but Solberst would let you do something twice. So, for example, I can shoot and kill something 7 inches away. That thing dies. Yeah. I now Solberst and shoot again.
Because it was an, it was a Solberst that yeah. was
And if that sounds unfair, it really was. The, this was hands down the best army for a period of time. What was better? What was it? This or the 9 Hive Tyrant list?
This would make people more angry because the 9 Hive Tyrant list would overpower you. This made it feel you didn't get to play the game.
Oh, it was two.
Because I got to do a bunch of stuff on your turn. Yeah,
it was 2 turn games.
Hey, man, is there any chance you would like to just hang out while I play the game?
Yeah.
You're like, not really. Well, you're going to have to.
It's kind of how this is going to happen. So about, and this was actually funny. I mean, from a people who like the story of the tabletop, it took years. GW, they began tweaking this out the gate with like rule tweaks, point tweaks, eventually.
They tried to point it. That was the biggest thing. They kept trying to point it.
Trying to point it, and then eventually they punted the whole thing.
They had to.
Nope.
This is one of the arguments. I was around for this, and they kept saying, "I go, you guys have you can't. You're killing regular Eldar, by the way. Regular Eldar didn't exist. It was just Yunari." So I kept telling the people and the design people of the game, "You have to change the mechanic." They're like, "Well, yeah, but we're pointing. You're making these more." I go, "It doesn't matter what you make cost more. I will use something else and break the rule."
The rule is broken. What I use to break the rule is immaterial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You make this cost too much. Cool. Now it's B. Yeah. It's going to be C. You know?
They were awesome. So about halfway through 8th edition, they just made a new rule. That's all it was.
They said you don't have a rule.
Yeah. Well, White Dwarf came out with a new rule, and that one sucked.
And it was not a rule. It was just
you don't get to do any of
these. You broke the
things.
Game. You don't get a rule now.
Yeah. So 9th edition comes out, they're okay. Now we're in 10th edition, and the new ones...
It's cool, because they get the...
It's actually quite good.
They move in the shooting phase. At the end of your opponent's shooting phase, they get a full move.
You get a full move, legit.
If they're under full strength.
Yeah, if they're under full strength, fight
and they
first,
get a,
plus one to wound.
And they get to manipulate the battle focus moves, the agile maneuvers. They can consolidate into whatever shot.
Yeah, I think that... The early 8th edition rules were the most lore specific. The new ones are pretty good because the idea is if something dies near you, you power up, but you just don't get the power up to the point where you end your opponent.
Now it's nice for the tabletop, not as good for the lore. 9th edition was terrible.
Yeah.
Because they just booted them.
Well, the Yinkarn was good and that was it.
The Yinkarn was busted, but like the rest of the army.
It's useless. Yeah.
Nonsense.
So anyway. Back to Yavrain, just now that we've kind of discussed the power that
on the tabletop. Yeah.
Well, it's also, I think it's a good way because I think the tabletop it's a tabletop game. That story there does help you understand how powerful the Yunari were. They were super fun, to be honest. Sure. At the start of 8th edition, they were hands down the most powerful army in the game.
Not even close. Yeah.
And that lined up with the lore. Yavrain coming out of the Dark City, powered by Yunid, was the most powerful creature in the galaxy.
Being able to double attack, like Word of Phoenix,
Yeah, that's something. And so that's why I tell that story. So people are saying, like, this is when it translated the lore, they made the most powerful army in the game. And it was lore specific.
Also because it's the power of Eldar from old days. This is what, you know, if you've read, if you haven't read the Elric books, like that's
They're
when he thinks
good.
Back to his old people,
yep.
you know, that's how they fought. You're like, oh, Eldar used to be, holy shit.
So let's go to Yavrain. So Yavrain now has one purpose in the galaxy. She's going to fully awaken Yunid. And because with Yunid at full strength, then the Eldar will be able to take on the dark gods and return the galaxy to peace. And to be fair, if all the Eldar souls are returned, you know, by destroying Slaanesh, no longer being able to draw their power, the Eldar do instantly become the most powerful race in the galaxy. They could, once Slaanesh is gone, take on Chaos. More importantly, they would eliminate Tyranids, Necrons. I'm not even going to bother with a Tau joke here.
Think about it, though. Eldar are also fighting with training wheels on because they don't use any of their most powerful psychic weaponry.
If Slaanesh is gone, they turn on and they eliminate everything in the galaxy. What would happen with the Jukari?
Yeah.
Fun exercise for another time. But Eldar do, if there is no Slaanesh, I'm going to say it now and I'll say it over and over again. With no Slaanesh, Eldar can actually fix the galaxy. That's how powerful they are.
Yeah.
So now the order of operations here is a little bit tricky. I'm going to tell this in the way that I believe it happened.
That's a big sigh from Brad. Because you're going to get to the thing that does not, wait for it, not relate to the tabletop. Because we're about to talk about
Crone Swords.
Yvraine getting her weapon.
Well, we're not talking about her getting it yet. We're talking about her looking for them. So, yeah, that'll be later.
Yes, but I'm saying, sorry. It makes me think about her.
Yeah. At some point when Yvraine is traveling through the Webway, she has this memory of back when she was an Un'Bieltan on the path of the Seer, learning about the Crone Swords of the Eldar. The Crone Swords were swords of fate that were created by Morai Heg, the god of fate. She had Cain, long story short, cut her hand off so she could drink her own blood and gain like the power of the visions inside of her blood. And if you want to go back to our Eldar cast, you want to know more about that. The fingers on her severed hand, she then had crafted into special swords that were granted to leaders within the Eldar. This is well before the fall. And each sword is imbued with the power of the Eldar god. But it's not, you know, there's a bit of Excalibur going on here. The power and the effect is locked to fate. So
you have to be the one that is destined to wield each weapon.
Exactly. The Crone Sword is incredibly powerful. Anyone who picks one up will feel the power. If this is Dungeons and Dragons, like a Vorpal Sword. But the difference is...
Stormbringer.
Yeah, but the difference is if you are fated to it, it gives you the power of dominion over life and death.
It also basically cuts through reality.
Yeah, they're not bad. So Yvraine knew that if she could collect the 5 Crone Swords and bring them together, she could use like the powers to combine to awaken Yeneed. And a fully awakened Yeneed with the Crone Swords could slay the Dark Gods.
There's also a bunch of prophecies for this also.
Yeah, the prophecies here are nuts. Most of the book is like, oh, and also here's a prophecy from before when you're going to read these things. So the first thing Yvraine needed was allies to help her fight. And so because collecting the Crone Swords, it's not going to be easy. And to do so, she needed a lot of allies. Luckily for Yvraine, 2 birds, 1 stone. She could get allies and a Crone Sword in one stop. Like at a Wawa, where you can get gasoline, iced tea, and a lovely hoagie.
I almost knocked myself unconscious, rolling my eyes so hard at that reference.
Oh, got it. There's only a few listeners who are getting a Wawa reference. And you get it. And you're welcome. Anyway, Yvraine is not going to the Wawa. Yvraine's going home. Yeah. So now we're going to talk about one of the most epic storylines, I think, of modern 40K, which is the Battle of Bieltan.
This is pretty awesome.
There is some, and I...
Also, these, painting my guys, I'm now starting to paint Eldar.
You're not allowed to paint Eldar.
I'm going to try.
You don't look shit.
You're not wrong.
Just go ahead and say it now. Nope. I mean, you have to pick up Thousand Suns next to really just see if you can give yourself an aneurysm. All right, Battle of Bieltan. So Yvraine was born and raised in the Bieltan craft world. It was there that she was Path the Warrior, the Seer, and actually some others. She left there to become a Corsair, etc. So with all that, she knew she could go back to Bieltan and she could speak to them because she understood them better than any other craft world.
It is a craft world that is the most, we've already said this, the most warlike. So rallying them to war feels like it would be the easiest to rally.
And also she's rallying them to destroy chaos, which Bieltan firmly believes they can do.
The largest enemy Eldar have. Yep.
And she also did have the Visark with her, who was an Autarch of the Bieltan. So that's going to help. What's not going to help is the giant cadre of Drukhari witches that she's hanging out with right now. So then we'll get to that. We'll get to this arrival later.
At this point in time, her Drukhari force is wildly larger than anything else.
Of course, yeah. But we'll get to that later. So the issue, though, is the forces of chaos also realized there was a very likely spot for Yvraine to head to. So the forces of Slaanesh know how dangerous Yeneed is going to be to them. But if they could kill Yvraine, they could, you know, harvest her soul and end this god of death.
Right.
So, but that being said, they knew that she would probably go to Bieltan. But they couldn't get into BL Tan, except they kind of could. And kind of like the walls of Helm's Deep, there's a little way in if you just know how to hit it just right. Just doing all the movie references today. So Slaanesh had a little bit of backstory, an entertainer called The Mask. And The Mask was this amazing dancer. She would dance and dance and dance, and she would make Slaanesh laugh, and she would just give Slaanesh lots of joy. However, during one of the battles within the warp, Slaanesh got her ass handed to her by, I forget which chaos god it was. I don't think it was Khorne, but she got beat up pretty bad. And Slaanesh was just sitting around sulking. And The Mask tried to cheer her up with this big elaborate dance and showing all these things. But Slaanesh didn't take the dance as, you know, something to cheer her up, but instead thought The Mask was mocking her for the way that she lost the battle, and cursed her and kicked her out of the warp and made her spend her an eternity dancing, which is a weird phrase to read.
Kind of, but it's still, it's very Slaaneshy.
It is. It's just odd.
And the thing is with the Mask doesn't get thrown out by herself. The Mask still has a full...
She's got a full
2,000 point army.
Yeah, I mean, she's small. So I'll say she's a greater demon, but I will say she's small. She's not most greater demons are giant. She does have the power of a greater demon. So she brings along this giant cadre, and all she wants to do is get back in the good graces of Slaanesh. What the Mask learns is that there's an ancient webway gate, an Eldar Exodite world named Ursilia. And this world was a webway gate where the other side is the BL-10 craft world itself. Now, the Eldar aren't stupid. They'd taken no risks and they'd sealed the gate permanently. But because they're BL-10, they didn't destroy the gate. Whereas most of the other craft worlds would have destroyed it, BL-10, knowing that one day they will come back to ruling the galaxy, saw no need to destroy the gate. They just put wards all over it and shut it down. And they did a good job. Like, it's not something where you the Mask can't walk up to it and put in the code of 12345, you know, like on Brad's luggage. The Mask knew that she had to break open the runes and the wards. And that was a power that she did not possess, but she knew someone who did. Going back to our demon cast, we discussed the Bloodthirsters of Khorne. And there was a certain Bloodthirster of Khorne who got a little bit too whipped up in the heat of the moment and decided to hit Khorne. Like, I think he hit his toe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he actually hit his foot.
He hit his foot.
He hit it so hard that he actually marred the brass armor of Khorne.
To which Khorne turned to this Bloodthirster named Scarban and flicked him.
8 days.
With his finger. And Scarban flew through the warp for 8 straight days at such speed and velocity that all his wings burnt off. And Scarbrand, now known as Scarbrand the Exiled, wants nothing more than to get back into the good graces of Khorne.
Also, Scarbrand was a Bloodthirster, which they're already psyched up in rage. These events made Scarbrand even more unhinged.
Yeah. Scarbrand is... And this is a fun phrase to say, the angriest bloodthirster in the galaxy.
Scarbrand used to have a better rule. I want to say this. Scarbrand's old rule was everybody within 6 inches, friend or foe,
used to get plus one attack.
Yeah, plus one. That's when you know you're super bad,
Was it 9th edition or 8th edition where he would also accidentally hit damage his own troops? There was something that where he would like attack, and every now and then, if he didn't have, it was like the Mad Doc Grotstick thing, where if he couldn't do something, he would get injured. Yeah. Anyway, so the Mask, and I like this story, approaches Scarbrand to parlay. Scarbrand responds by immediately attacking the demon of Slaanesh.
Well, also, Slaanesh and Khorne don't exactly get along.
They don't. Luckily, the Mask learned the 5 D's of dodgeball, of dodge, dive, dip, duck, dodge. And dive.
Sometimes you got to have your Irish coach tell you how to do it.
Exactly. If you dodge a wrench.
Another, you can dodge ball.
It's another fantastic movie. So after dodging all of his attacks, Scarbrand, this isn't written down, gets bored. And just starts walking away from the Mask. to the mask, like a little sibling gets running up like, but hey, come on. Hey, come
in
on.
In my mind, it's the dog from the old.
Yeah, from like, the old like, Looney Tunes.
Come on, Spike, let's do this.
Come on. He's like, whatever. So she sits there and tells Scarbrand they're going to have a competition, an Eldar killing competition. Because she claims that as a demon of Slaanesh, she's better at killing Eldar than Scarbrand or any demon of Khorne ever could be.
I love that Scarbrand does not see through this at all and goes, nah.
Well, Scarbrand's kind of torn. So Scarbrand's problem is that he's insulted that this little, because she is tiny, especially compared to him.
But it's such a manipulation. You're right, just but like, the is, it's but wildly obvious.
It is, but he can't turn it down. He's been challenged by another demon to for a killing competition for
to him,
to turn it down
by a lesser god.
By a lesser demon of a lesser god, you know, has challenged him to a competition. For him not to honor it would be tantamount to saying, you're right, you are superior. So he agrees to meet her on Orsilia. Now Orsilia is an Exodite world of the Eldar. The Exodites live in the Materium, and living in the Materium and being Eldar means that they fight chaos all day, every day. They are masters of fighting chaos. What they're not masters of fighting is the most powerful bloodthirster in the entire galaxy, along with the Mask, basically fighting two entire legions of chaos at the same time. They get their asses
fighting the Amish of the Eldar.
They're the Amish, but not like you say. They're the Amish. They all
the Amish with bright lances.
Yeah, I was gonna say like and dinosaurs. They're pretty well geared up, but no, colossal failure. Luckily, Eldred coming back into the story and the Harlequins.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
After Demesnes, Eldar knew that he had not failed. He just failed to succeed, which is different. And he's the greatest farsayer in the galaxy. He just goes back and starts meditating and reads the fates. And he knew that Yeneed would occupy a soul. And he knew that soul would eventually find themselves on Bieltan. He also knew that conflict with Slaanesh was going to happen.
This is cool in the book, though, because they measure it as he gets physical pain.
Yeah, learning this stuff. I mean, in fact, two of his retune, whatever it is, turn into crystals doing this meditation. It's such an intense meditation.
They get lashed. Yeah. Because of the battle with Slaanesh, he sees so many Eldar lives dying.
It kills his followers. Exactly. So he dispatches the Harlequins to go warn Bieltan, because he has to. Because we said before, the Harlequins can move through the webway in an instant. Eldred learns this stuff. There's not a lot of time. So he learns this and has to dispatch. There's not time even for Eldred to get across the galaxy. So around the same time the demons begin their conflict with Orsilia, the Harlequins arrive on the Bieltan craft world. And this part of the story is awesome. They arrive, and there's an Autark and Dire Avengers waiting for them when they come out with swords drawn. Because Bieltan don't fully trust the Harlequins. They're not going to kill them, but they want to know, why are you here?
The Harlequins are still kind of flippant, especially for the Bieltan.
Exactly. Well, from the perspective of the Bieltan, the Harlequins they're better than Drukhari. That's basically how they're classified out. But I love this little bit of a story. I don't want to ruin it all, but the Autark, the Dimensions is not grilling, but pushing hard. Why are you here? What are you doing here? And the leader of the Harlequins extends his hand and opens his palm, and there's a stone in the palm of his hand. The Autark looks down at the stone, turns around, and tells all of his Axe-backed warriors to, you know, basically gear up. We're attacking at dawn and off to Orsilia, because he recognized that what the Harlequin was holding was a piece of the Webway Gate on Orsilia.
That goes straight to Bieltan.
And so Bieltan goes full invasion mode. And again, this book's awesome. I'm telling you guys a story right now. Go back and read it. We'll tell you the name at the end, because I've already forgotten what it is, but it's written in the notes later. So if you want to know what book we're talking about, I wrote it down, and I'm going to get to it later in the notes.
The Bieltan do give out for free, and a lot of them boots of mighty ass kick.
They're incredible. So the Bieltan arrive in the world, and they see it's devastated. Luckily, it's not hard to find the demons, because they were using warp stones to just eviscerate the Exodites. And there's a Scarbrand, like, you know, wound on the planet. So the Bieltan use the tried and true lightning strike method that always comes in, coming out of the skies with incredible speed, and just start picking off the Chaos forces, just slaughtering all of them. However, there is one thing in the galaxy faster than an Eldar. That's a fallen Eldar. The Slaanesh demons leap up out of nowhere and start actually destroying the bikes as they go to turn around. Now, BL-10 are not weak warriors. They see this happen basically once and go, okay, let's change tactics. Now we're going full power mode. And they just turn, they land on the planet and just decide, all right, we're just going to kill them one by one and start marching through all the forces.
Now, these are the, I said about half of the BL-10 got boots of mighty ass kicking. The other ones apparently missed the sail. And those are the ones that went to fight Skarbrand.
Well, I'm going to defend them a little bit here. Skarbrand was an unknown to the Eldar. The Eldar, they knew about bloodthirsters, and they decided, we're just going to deal with Skarbrand the way you deal with a bloodthirster.
True.
Because this guy got busted.
But they also do downplay him a lot because they think that this is a lesser bloodthirster.
Because his wings are missing. Right. His wings are burnt off, and he's hanging out with Slaanesh demons. I think it's fair to be like, oh, this guy's kind of like, you know, this is definitely B-team.
He was not
B-team. Yeah, he's not B-team. The issue was that, what about Skarbrand? Is at this same time, Skarbrand has run out of Eldar to kill and was bored because he also finished chewing all
the Eldar just stopped going near him after the first wave of Eldar.
What I'm saying is, so Skarbrand has landed. He's killed all the Exodites. He gets bored, so he starts killing Slaanesh demons.
Yeah.
And it's because he'd been lured over right by what's called the Obsidian Gate, which is what the Webway is, to fight there. Then, while he's fighting over there, bored, just killing Slaanesh demons, he hears a large commotion and looks over and sees the skies erupt and all these Eldar forces come down, but not at him. They're fighting about a mile away. And Skarbrand sees this and is furious and begins rushing to that battle because he doesn't want the mask getting a bunch of kills. So, running that way. The mask, though, needs Skarbrand by the Obsidian Gate. So she jumps on some demonette chariots, and rushes over to the Obsidian Gate, to which all the Eldar follow this. So just what we have is poor BL-10 are coming down to kill something. The thing they're killing starts running towards another force of demons, which are also running towards them. They don't know. The Eldar have no idea what's going on, but they decide, they see the mask, though, and they recognize that has to die.
Because that's what's going to try to open up the Obsidian Gate.
So they go after the mask. Unfortunately for the Eldar, Skarbrand's anger is at like an 11. And so I enjoy this a lot. There's the combination of blinding hate and bloodlust empower him to an inconceivable level. Not Vicini inconceivable, but actually inconceivable. The Eldar have a couple grav tanks that basically come straight down on top of the Master Killer.
Well, that's the funny thing here. Is that, that's what I'm saying. Like, in the beginning, I went too quickly. Yeah. But the initial wave of Eldar come down and then just get destroyed by Skarbrand. So everybody just goes, screw this. And they go, he does have burn up wings. Shoot him with big tanks from the sky.
Yeah, it's actually quite funny because Skarbrand just takes one axe in each hand and blows up two grav tanks. And so the Eldar just go, all right, we're just going to fire prism the bloodthirster because that seems to always work. And they take a bunch of fire prisms and fire them at him. You know that scene in Godzilla where they blast him with something and then he kind of just takes a step back and then fires nuclear fire out of his mouth at everything else? Skarbrand kind of does that. Skarbrand's rage from the pain of being shot by the fire prisms causes him to, I believe the term is Super Saiyan. I didn't watch Dragon Ball
Z. Super Saiyan.
Super Saiyan, thank you. I didn't watch Dragon Ball Z, but I'm aware of it. So he does this. The shockwave that comes out of him disintegrates everything near him. Khorne demons, Slaanesh demons, Eldar, everything's gone. Everything but the mask.
Yeah. Skarbrand should not be Skarbrand the Exiled. Skarbrand should be Skarbrand the Collateral Damage.
Yes.
that dude kills at least as many people that are fighting with him in every battle he's ever been in.
Scarbrand's amazing. So Scarbrand turns and looks at the mask, and the mask effectively gives him the middle finger. He launches himself full-blown at the mask, who leaps out of the way, causing Scarbrand at full power to slam into the obsidian gate.
This is hilarious, but this is so Roadrunner versus Coyote.
Oh, completely is, yeah.
It just, he's just like, whoops.
Yep, whoopsies. Bam. This now opens the gate. The gate comes online instantly when he breaks all the wards, at which point the mask and her forces that were not eliminated in the Scarbrand explosion jump into the gate. Scarbrand immediately realizes that he was a pawn and decides, I'm going to go pull that mask limb from limb and launch and jumps himself into the obsidian gate.
Which is crazy. The next thing that happens is crazy because Scarbrand's so angry that his personal anger, which by the way, usually means to summon Khorne demons and things, you have to have this crazy amount of bloodshed and rage and anger. One being.
Yeah. Scarbrand got so angry that his anger tore a hole in reality, and a bunch of blood letters and other devotees of Khorne were drawn to it from the Immaterium, launched, and then followed Scarbrand also into the Webway Gate. Watching all of this, the Eldar commander, whose entire job, by the way, was to not let this happen, does the smart thing and goes, screw this, and blows the gate up.
His defense, it shouldn't have, but shooting the Bloodthirster shouldn't have killed your tanks in return.
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't have ended that way. So at this point, they destroy the gate. Back on Bieltan, the Eldar are very good at stuff. They were preparing. They knew that they were going to send a force to defend the Obsidian Gate, but they had to be prepared in case it didn't work. So what they did was two steps. The first thing they did was they sealed all the Webway portals all over the craft world, except for the main one. And at the main one, which sounds some foreshadowing, but to their credit, at the main one, they put 1/3 of the entire BL-10 armed forces in front of this gate.
Well, and they also made it a killing field. Yeah, absolute they had killing elevated field. Positions. Yeah. They had defenses.
This was the viewpoint. Anything comes in there. But because of the way Eldar communication works, they don't know what's happening down on Ursilia. So they're having to send like ranger boats effectively in and out of the Webway to look to give a heads up to anyone coming back. So they're kind of doing these laps. The problem for them is the mask. The mask is very, very smart. And the mask does something kind of cool. The mask inside the Webway hides herself and sees one of these ranger ships. And then she jumps onto the bottom of the ship and is then brought back into Bieltan. At which point, randomly, when she's far enough away from the entrance, just lets go and falls back and onto the craft world. So what she does then is once she's there, she uses her real powers. And so the mask's main power is she's like a Medusa but instead of a gaze, it's a dance. And anyone who looks upon her is immediately overwhelmed and then corrupted. So what she does is as she's moving through the craft world, she's isolating Eldar, enthralling them with her dance, then turning them into vessels with which demonettes take hold
and possess them.
So she's slowly building this massive force within the craft world of Eldar. So that kind of sucks. She probably would have gotten caught doing this because you can only do this so far. I mean, she's probably grabbing the engineer, which is still a good fighter because it's Bieltan, but eventually the Aspect Wars are going to take notice. Luckily, Scarbrand.
He's kind of loud.
Scarbrand does not make a subtle entrance, whereas the mask snuck her way into the craft world. Scarbrand came through the front door, blowing apart every ward and protection that Bieltan had placed there, and him and his blood letters come flying through, slaughtering hordes of Aspect warriors. That's right. The name of the book is Gathering Storm Part 2. Read this, because this next scene is awesome.
Yep.
Before Scarbrand or the mask get onto the ship, at the center of the craft world, right by the Infinity Circuit, is their Shard of Kane. And the Shard of Kane had begun shaking and ebbing with rage. which everyone knew what it meant. So the Autarch knew what knew what to do, and he walked over.
Time to do a ritual, baby. Time to do a ritual.
Once Scarbrand arrives, the BL-10 Autarch breaks the shard and is overtaken by the Avatar of Kane. And this scene is cool as hell because Scarbrand is slaughtering Aspect hosts right on the gate, and just with his axes, just chopping things to pieces. And then here comes the Avatar of Kane striding through the Aspect warriors right up to Scarbrand. And the two of them have a monster fight.
And read this, because the Avatar doesn't get enough credit, because the Avatar is made up of molten metal.
Yeah.
It is T-1000 liquid metal all the time.
And he and Scarbrand are, you know, Scarbrand's got his axes and Avatar's got his spears, and they're just wrecking each other. But every blow that should be a mortal wound just doesn't fell them, because they're both full of rage. It's a key thing with the Avatar of Kane. The Avatar of Kane is not a like, oh, I summoned something. This is rage incarnate for the Eldar. And Scarbrand is also rage incarnate. They should have been best friends. Like, they should have, like, you know.
Did we just become best friends?
We're going to make bunk beds so we have more room for activities. These two have this epic fight. And eventually the Avatar just decides to outrage Scarbrand and runs him through with his spear, lifting him into the air. The gravity pulls Scarbrand down the shaft as he's coming down on him, and starts just hacking away at the Avatar with his axes. The Avatar just screams into his face. Scarbrand screams back, and all this screaming obliterates every lesser demon anywhere nearby, plus a bunch of Eldar. And in the end, all that's left is a pile of molten lava on the ground. But as we said, this was just a distraction. On the other side of the ship, the mask is heading towards the Infinity Circuit. And everyone who gets in front of the mask, as we said, she instantly possesses. Except one. Suddenly, a larger than normal Eldar appears in front of her with a cool spear and some pretty cool red hair. The mask.
Cool. Awesome red hair. Yeah,
the mask begins to dance to control it. And James Zar has none of that.
He tried to hear that scene. Yeah,
smacks the ever-living hell out of the mask. Jane Zar's Howling Banshees then come out of nowhere and just begin slaughtering all of the demonettes around her. Unfortunately, the mask has one purpose, and she's close enough to her purpose. So she leaps, realizing that Jane Zar is going to easily kill her. She leaps into the Infinity Circuit and is able, because she's a demon, she's able to pass through into the Infinity Circuit, at which point a bunch of her other demonettes follow. Jane Zar and her retinue slaughter what's left of the demonettes, but they can't do anything about the ones who've
leapt into the Infinity Circuit.
Yeah. The problem with this is that the craft worlds themselves are basically built around the Infinity Circuit. With the Infinity Circuit being now infected with chaos, so Slaanesh is now consuming souls in there, the craft world itself begins to die. The actual structures of the craft worlds are falling apart.
Because, well, remember that the craft worlds are made. The elves are still elves, like fantasy elves. They have made their entire, everything from the craft world is sung into existence from the seers.
And so
they make the wraith bone.
And if the origin of the wraith bone dies, everything dies. This is the moment that Yavrane appears in the craft world. And her sudden appearance is not met with joy. As I said before, a super powerful Eldar psyker. An Eldar can sense this, just walks through a webway gate with a solitaire and a ton of Drukhari.
Well, this is a big deal because it's understandable why they're not met with happiness, because the Drukhari are known for going, oh, cool, a battle's going super bad for somebody. Now I should attack the people.
Exactly.
Yeah. They just think that the Drukhari showed up to go, we're going to make it even worse for you.
Yeah. Luckily, it's between the solitaire. They don't speak, but just the fact there's a solitaire there helps. And the Visarch, the Eldar give him a second. Yavrane explains what's going on, and they are escorted under heavily armed guard toward the Seer Council. On this path, the Seer Council, though, the Bieltan get a glimpse of why they should listen to Yavrain. And it's because as they're going, a bunch of demons come out of nowhere and attack specifically Yavrain. They all launch themselves just at her. She, with a flick of her hand, by the way, destroys these things. But that's a great moment for the Bieltan warriors because they see the power of Yavrain, which can be good or bad, but more importantly, they see that she is the number one enemy of Slaanesh.
Which, the enemy of my enemy.
Exactly. So now we're going to give her some time. So the Seer Council sits back and they have a massive debate discussing what we're going to do, how we're going to do this. And some of the Seer Council do actually remember the younger Yavrain, and there is an affection towards her. At the same time, others are a little bit less overjoyed.
Well, let's give this. Us this presence, though. This isn't like after the battle. She's telling all of them while this is all going on.
Well, yeah, Scarbrand's gone at this point, but the craft world itself is falling apart.
Right, it's falling apart, and there's still a shit ton of demons here.
Yeah, and so what Yavrain does is she tells them about Ginnid and her mission to bring Ynid to life. She tells them about the Crone Swords and how they're going to be used to destroy the enemies. And as she's doing this, you know, the council is asking her questions. They're debating it. The spirit seers, by the way, are, while this, all right, fun story on this. While this is happening, the spirit seers are basically running all around their room because they're right next to the Infinity Circuit. Yeah, this isn't like
diving back and forth, holding. Yeah. They're basically juggling spirit stones, trying to capture as many
and slapping the spirit stones on there. One cool story on this, though, we'll get to later, was what happens. How Jane Zar's retinue starts helping out with this, but we'll get there in a minute. But this is a chaotic moment, and they're right there. And it's not until Jane Zar walks back in and appears and tells everyone, basically, listen to Yavrain.
Well, she does the fantasy moment of everybody arguing and effectively cuts the table in half and just goes, enough.
Yavrain told everyone that Bieltan can be saved, but only by the god Ynid. And she just walks over to the currently being corrupted Wraithbone circuit and just puts her hand into it. As she goes to do this, an Autarch leaps up to go kill her for trying to touch this. And Jane Zar doesn't kill him, but knocks him across the room instantly. Like, Jane Zar reaches into it. And the cool thing is as she does this, she coalesces all the souls inside into something new. Like tens of thousands of souls die and are formed into a new thing. An avatar, not of Kane, but of Ynid. And this is the birth of the Yinkarn. Couple cool things that as this happens. As this occurs, while she's doing it, it's not an instant. The circuit itself begins to basically scream and begins to break apart. Yavrain's followers start grabbing spirit stones themselves and start slapping them on, including incubi. Witches begin climbing, all over the Infinity Circuit, helping the spirit seers save as many souls as possible. So, and this bit's important in a second, but it shows that she's not leading like a ragtag group. They all are unified under her. As the Yinkarn is born, though, all the corruption, including the mask inside of it, is purged. The Bieltan are saved. They are incredibly damaged, but they are saved. And the power of the Yunari is finally on full display. Let's just say more than a couple Bieltan decide to go join forces with her.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge thing on this because you see the unified forces of...
For the first time. This is Harlequins, Eldar, and Drukhari fighting as one.
For the first time in...
Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, technically ever.
Technically ever, that's true.
There were no Drukhari before. Yeah, so this is the first time ever. Light years away, Eldrad sensed all this happening. His plan, though delayed, was coming together. And he knew that the fate of the Eldar depended on Yavrain and her new and the Yunari. So he gathers together all the other seers to create their magic. I don't have a better term for it. It's magic. That's what they did in that situation. This time they all got together and cast a spell. And the spell opened a portal from the Bieltan craft world to the Ulthway craft world. And this way, they could get Yvraine and all her forces to them. The part of this that is funny is that this portal opens in front of Yvraine. And Yvraine is not, she's not, Yvraine is, I always like to point out to people, she's not this like, oh, I now have powers. What will I do with it? Like a lot of movies, Yvraine's fully aware of everything because she's got a god inside of her. She sees it. So her, the Yinkarn, all of her followers and her new followers step through it and are transported to Ulthway with a very fun side effect. This is a portal, not a webway. They basically do a warp jump, which the Eldar do not do, by the way.
Yeah, across the galaxy, yeah. Too.
And this warp jump is a combination of the psychic energy to create the portal, the presence of an avatar god, and Yvraine's powers.
Oh, this is such a train fire for the Immaterium.
They fire, launches across the Immaterium. This, anything in between these two points in the Immaterium dies. It rips a hole in the Immaterium going through there.
But it also creates effectively a sonic boom.
Yeah, well, that's also the funnier part. Any Imperial ship that was traveling, its Gellerfield just overloaded. And they got immediately possessed by all demons inside of it. A bunch of navigators just straight up died who were on the wrong side of this. Because if this happened between you and the Astronomicon, you were wearing night vision glasses and someone put on a freaking floodlight in your eyes. So all of it kills off tons of navigators, crashing ships, all this stuff. There's a ton of death. The Eldar could not have cared less. In fact, they were completely aware that was going to happen. And Eldred's viewpoint was, I would literally do more than this.
I needed to get across the galaxy.
What? Yeah, I don't make more people.
It wasn't even that many of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Comparatively, you're fine. You guys, you breed like rabbits.
And we're going to use this last part because this drives me crazy.
What?
Because GW wanted to change the IP to something that they could freaking copyright.
So when they arrive on Ulthway,
Eldred. Love this story. This part's dumb.
Eldred refers to Yvraine and her followers not as Yunari, but as Asuriani, which, to Brad's point, was a term that never existed before. They added it in because it turns out the way IP works, if you don't file a patent on something when you first release it, you can't then do it 30 years later.
Well, they couldn't do it. Eldar and stuff was just something that was used.
It had been used elsewhere. Yes, yeah, so they couldn't use it. So they had to
rename. It's like you can't copyright elves. Yeah.
They had to make a new copyright. But anyway, the term that he used was Asuriani, which is the old term for their race. And this is what we were just discussing earlier. It's because
it was the first ancient time. Name for them.
Yeah, it's because this is the first time that they're back together. The Drukhari, Crathworld, and Harlequins are all one. They fight as one. And so now, under Yvraine, they were born anew under an Eldar god. They become the Eldar of old. And so with that, because this has gone real long, we're going to break. And next week, we're going to continue this journey on the growth of the Yunari as they grow their forces. So until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you next week.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.